Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bummer Bit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your sober calls from that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, I can't breathe. The suffocating truth of Australia's race relations. Black Lives Matters, yes, but also black deaths in custody here in this country, the big island, Australia. Look, I'm going to catch up a yarn with our beautiful sister, Alison Whittaker, and she's a PhD in black deaths in custody from the University of New South Wales. Got her on the line. Very good morning, my sister Alison. How are you?
Morning, Trav. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on, especially on such a topic like this.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, my sister, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
I'm a Gomeroi woman. I grew up in Gunnedah.
Fantastic. Tell us what you're studying. Well, the PhD in black deaths in custody. It's sad, but it's a new subject, you could say, in regard to university, White University, yes?
Certainly is. So the research that I've been doing, so I did a master's in this as well, and now I'm doing a PhD. I really wanted to take the question seriously that black families ask after their loved one has died inside. So they often ask, why is there no accountability? Why is there no justice? And when I went to kind of do the research, I was really horrified to see that nobody was trying to answer that question. So I wanted to take on that question and see if I could answer for them. These are like the legal structures, these are the political realities that are stopping mob from getting justice, and maybe this is how we go about fixing them.
And look, if not the PhD on this topic is done, then what we need to use the tools that are available. And in this topic, there's no tools in actual fact. It falls on deaf ears, goes in the in trays, and here we have it, over 432 black deaths in custody, no convictions to any officers. So there's a pandemic, you could say, regarding black deaths in custody.
You absolutely could, Trev. I'll give you some of the numbers from my master's, which is like a pilot study. And
please.
I'll do more of these as I kind of go into the PhD. So the pilot study was like a one-year research project, and I looked at 134 cases of deaths in custody that went to coroner's courts. So all deaths in custody go to a coroner's court.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 134 deaths, coroners thought about passing the brief on to prosecutors just 11 times. And of those 11 times, they only gave a brief to prosecutors 5 times. And of those 5 times, only twice did courts actually proceed with the matter. Did prosecutors bring the matter to court, sorry. And in both matters, there was either an acquittal, so a jury said not guilty, or there was a quashed indictment, which means the court got rid of it on a technicality. So, you know, there's like this big series of filters that mob has to go through, and each layer is harder and harder, and at every checkpoint, kind of, so to speak, white complicity.
Of course.
And the whole system kind of working to think in a particular way that says nobody is to blame for Indigenous deaths, which you and I, Trev, know is not true.
Exactly. So when you look at it, there's no black faces at any of the so-called levels in regard to investigations as such. So that in itself is a flaw, a foundation for not guilty all the way through.
Yeah, that's right. So even from the moment of investigation, investigations of deaths in custody, which we know from the Royal Commission have to be treated as homicides, that recommendation from the Royal Commission that's been actually taken up. The investigations themselves are done by police investigating units, or sometimes with the assistance of corrections investigating units. And so already you can see kind of from the get-go that families and us as First Nations people have a really limited opportunity to actually investigate what's going on the ground. And what actually is happening is that police and corrections are investigating themselves. So it's hard to kind of look at that and to see that that's a fair and impartial investigation. As you said, it looks like from the start, there's all kinds of systems working to make sure that what happens is they're not guilty.
Well, exactly. And so there should be also, well, it states that by the investigation that there's need to be changes at the high end in regard to the courts for justice for our people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it has to be something that's a really, really fundamental change, because the research that I've kind of looked at the moment suggests that there's a problem in courts and in investigations that is kind of legal. So you could tinker around the edges, you could make a couple of legal changes, you could make a couple of changes to evidence laws, etc. But there's also this really long-standing colonial viewpoint that will find laws to express itself in. So like the colonial viewpoint is this idea in coroner's courts, at least, that what is killing people inside is just like comorbidities like high blood pressure or diabetes or heart attack.
Yes.
When actually it's become blinded to the violence of, say, if you leave someone in a cell for 3 days with no treatment, what happens to them? So there's that fundamental kind of tension that we have to address. Otherwise, if we just keep tinkering with the laws, the kind of how this happens is going to change, but the fact that it happens is not going to change at all.
Well, we as black people, we start to think, like, who else is involved in regard to no convictions as such? I mean, do we look at also the so-called medical professions? Are they, are they bringing up their so-called medical conditions of our mob who are incarcerated or apprehended and use that as this first excuse why the person has died? We get to think that way, don't we?
It's so true, and that's something that happened in the recently released findings in the inquest into the death of David Dungay Jr., whose last words were also, people might remember, "I can't breathe,"
yes,
are similar to George Floyd in the US. And I think about what happened to Mr. Dungay was in a prison hospital, and was in part initiated by nurses as well. So it's not only police and corrections that have a role to play in deaths in custody. The role of medical professionals also, I think, needs to be looked at. As we saw with the inquest into the death of Ms. Williams, a Wiradjuri woman who presented to a hospital. She wasn't a death in custody, but she presented to a hospital. And because of racial biases, they assumed that she was presenting for drug issues, and instead they sent her home. She was pregnant and she became septic and she passed away. So there's a whole lot of systems in place. Aboriginal people die long before their time. And as you said, it's much bigger problem than just what's being looked at the moment.
And then when you look at it, well, 432 odd black deaths in custody, no conviction, and look, it's a pandemic across the globe, so to speak, and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the officer that so-called accidentally shot the Australian woman in America, the copper had black skin and he was convicted. Go figure. If he was a white copper, would he have got off?
That's true. And I know it was, it is absolutely frustrating and horrible what happened to that woman. And I could not in any way ever justify it or take her family's pain
away. Exactly.
But it was frustrating for First Nations people to see the amount of attention that her death in custody in the US got, when it's so hard to raise any kind of media attention outside of black media here for deaths in custody is really, really difficult.
What comes to mind as black people, and we sound like a broken record, my sister, you will agree, the word white privilege.
That's it.
You know? And they wonder what we're going on about. You wouldn't know if you haven't got black skin.
That's right. I've got quite light skin myself, and so
likewise,
I see the way that I navigate in the world, it gives me, I guess, like what not we call white privilege, but white passing privilege, and to see my dark skin siblings go through.
But a spy for us mob, for us black fellas too, you'd be deadly there, sister. Spy. But in regards to honesty, you would. Yeah, sorry, but I'm saying in regards to your conversation as a fair-skinned person, a black person, you know, and I'm fair-skinned and I've got white friends or in conversation with a white person and they say, oh, look at those blacks. And I go, excuse me, that's my people. I know you're different. I'm not different. You know what I mean?
No, that's right. That's right. And we got to refuse those. Like what you said, like white privilege, we get in sometimes as light-skinned Indigenous people, we get invited into white privilege, and every time it's our job to refuse that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, look, it's a very important PhD you're doing here, Black Deaths in Custody. With this, what can become of it, my sister? Where do you take this information and how does it become a tool for our fight as in black people in this country in regard to Black Deaths in Custody?
I'm really, really glad you asked, Trev. So it's a PhD, which means I'll be researching it for a little while, so it'll be a long time before it can actually be useful.
Yes.
But the preliminary findings, Mob, are more than welcome to come and contact me about if they're interested and if they'd like maybe to discuss them sometime. So I can be emailed about the PhD at a.whitaker@unsw.edu.au. And what I hope to do at the end of the PhD is actually turn this into a group resources, both legal resources and advocacy resources, so that it can become a tool for families who are looking for justice after their loved one has died inside, which unfortunately we know is going to happen again and again until something changes.
Well, exactly, you know, and hard to say and sad to say, but in actual fact, I don't want to see you working in this space. That's the ultimate goal. You know, let's fix this so we don't have a space to be working in. I mean, 432, no convictions, go figure. This is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and hopefully one day I'll be made redundant, Trev. That's my dream.
That's the goal, exactly, and that's what I was alluding to in regarding the conversation. Look, thank you so very much for sharing, my sister. Alison, with the PhD, Black Deaths in Custody, you're running with this piece of paper. Do you find you're getting support in the legal sense or with the University of New South Wales in regard to your paper?
Yeah, UNSW have been tremendously supportive. I also do a PhD part-time at UNSW. I also work at Jumbunna UTS with the other half of my part-time.
Okay.
So, yeah, working double time to make sure this happens.
Fantastic. Well, it's a very important space you're working in. I thank you very much for sharing, my sister. And black media is a tool that can add to, how you say, the hardcore of the paper that you're working on. So thank you so very much, my sister. Look, you stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and we'll be yarning soon, Alison.
I hope so. Right back to you, Trev. Stay deadly.
You take care. Bye-bye, sis.
Bye-bye.
Deadly yarn there, beautiful yarn with Alison Whitaker, a fantastic Gumeroi woman there, and look, studying law in University of New South Wales, and her PhD in Black Deaths in Custody, and be a while before it finishes, but the ball is rolling in regard to the work she's doing for our mob in regard to Black Deaths in Custody. Needs to stop, needs to stamp out racial discrimination across the board in this country, and look, a very important work that she's doing with that piece of paper. Your mob can have your say in Yarn Up Song, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Don't forget that deadly number, that's 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Baldy on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we've got Across the Nation, thanks to NIRS. That's NIRS, 1-800-422-416. Give the Murray call, let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
other side. Woman and a that we didn't know. But now she's from the DARPA clan. Have you ever seen my land? A beautiful place for all to see. The waterfalls, the colored sands. This place they call my home. Hope Fell.
Beautiful land and sea, too dirty. Black Image, your deadly program here is National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, 1-800-422-416. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yana with the Bully on Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev, Murray from the Curry with your deadly program, National Talk Black. We're going to catch up. We've got brother Deborah George online. Deborah George, Deborah Pilot, my bella. How are you? You there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, who's this, Tony?
Yeah, mate, yes.
Tony,
yes.
How are you?
Oh, I'm a little bit happy this morning. My Mrs. Donna's birthday today, she would have been 59.
Oh, happy birthday to the beautiful lady with us in spirit, brother.
Thank you. I'll go to Santa Cruz and Flowers afterwards and spend some time. Regarding that grave, I've got an update on that. There is a public interest story.
Good.
And I've gone... people that don't know, I'm being refused by Cairns Council here in North Queensland to own my own grave site next to my missus there, passed away about 6 weeks ago. And I've just gone through all the conditions, and the condition number 5, it says, this will tell you, in the event of plots and sites are no longer required, you know, someone might be... whatever, they don't want it, they may be sold back to council for the total amount that was originally paid. So I've just spoken to the council that rang me this morning, and I said, well, if that's the case, if I wanted to change it and I sold it back to you, you would have had to sold me in the first place. Oh, we haven't done that for 15 years. And then I said, well, we've been talking about this on national radio and you're double dipping and getting interested, and you couldn't. And there's no compassion, understanding. I've been denied, you know, and it's the ultimate segregation for a black and white couple.
Yes, that's what it seems, because, look, we put my beautiful mother to rest 8 years ago, and at that time my father bought the plot next to her. And there was no dramas. He paid it, you know, but that's a black man on a black woman with a black woman. You're a white man with a black woman. And so we start to think, is there different rules?
You're right, mate. It's a plot, no pun. It's a plot against me because I am active, you know, and I just take it personally. It's just wrong anyway. Besides all the racial thing, a man should be able to buy the thing next to his missus. That's your other half. Travel along things on side by side, you know, and I don't have the security of knowledge of proper ocean. You know, I can leave my funeral plan with somebody else, and the more I pay now, the more they can do it. Whoever gets that's up to them. But I have to know that is my plot, because anything can go wrong. Anything can go wrong. But that is the whole point, that in the event of plots and sites are no longer required, they can be sold back to council. for the total amount. Well, that says, and I told the council, oh, this is your current paperwork now, and I'll fax it around or whatever I've got to do, and I'm going to go on about it, because I am taking it personally, and I think it
is. So you should.
And so I should, mate. I can, and I don't want to do that. I want to take the easy way out. But you know, you try and get a business going and fill in the forms if you're a black and white couple.
Exactly.
I don't know how. I think that was a black and white couple that ended up painting that big jumbo jet that used to fly around the country. You know that thing.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was, yeah.
So the bottom line is, you're still not allowed to buy that plot.
Well, they're escalating it in the council, and I says, well, you can't talk to me. They can ring me back and I'll give you my personal opinion on what you're doing to me, and you know, and what, the pain and suffering and humiliation. No one should have to do this, mate.
Exactly.
No one should have to do this, and this can happen to anybody. And when you do these things, maybe people would like their own grave instead of being buried on top of each other, and people like it that way.
Sure.
But respectfully, it's not my choice or way of doing things.
Exactly, exactly. I've got to go to another caller, but please do keep in touch and let us know how you go with that, Tony. That's Tony Gibbs there calling from Goodman in a situation with buying the plot next to his wife, a sister who passed away only about a month ago, and he's got the money ready to roll, but they won't sell him the plot, so go figure. Look, add to the conversation, tell us anything similar to that happened to you. Love to hear from you. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. We're now going to go to Deborah Pollen on the line. Debbie, you there?
Yeah. Good morning.
Well, good morning, my brother. Good morning. Let the mob know who you mob, where you're from. Deborah?
I'm from Darling Island, Eastern Torres Strait.
Yes, beautiful.
I'm from Cesarim. I'm Cesarim Clare, and on my tribe.
Beautiful, brother. Beautiful. And what's your topic today? What are you going to yarn about today, Deborah?
Look, just questions there for you. That was listening to the lady there before talking about Black Death in Custody,
eh? Yes, Black Death in Custody. Yep, she's doing a PhD. That's Alison Whittaker, beautiful sister down there at University of New South Wales.
Yeah, just thinking, well, how come a legal service hadn't had any success in any of these cases?
True,
that's
too.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Legal service we've had for so many years, eh?
Exactly.
And they're accountable too, eh, I suppose, you know, for the money that they get.
Well, we start to think a tiger with no tooth, so to speak, eh?
Yeah, paper tigers, yeah, like they say. And what's the have they got any hits on, I mean, like any success in taking any of these, I think one big one was the Palm Island one.
Sure.
That was the only one that made it that through. All the courts and that, but what about their mothers? You know, it's all over Australia, isn't it? Hey.
Well, 432 odd deaths in custody and no conviction, you know, so that's the score, 432-0, you know what I mean? If you look at a scoreboard, so to speak.
Yeah, there's something wrong there.
Very
The other thing was, well, you know, I'm younger than you, eh?
Thank you, I respect your uncle.
So I went to, I read up or find up for pension, you know?
Yep.
And they tell me I can't have it. I can't get on the pension until I reach a certain age. But like, it's gone up since last time I'd be fine. But when you got
so you went to sign up and you're not eligible. Is that what they're telling you?
That's I'm not eligible. Eligible.
Eligible.
Illegal.
Illegal.
So I rung around and that, and ring up to a few people on government, you know, and they tell me that you've got different years that you're eligible to for pension.
Mm-hmm.
So then I heard one lady talking about a closing gap the last week, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of women on your show, eh? But anyway.
Good, brother. Yeah, that's why you need more men calling in. But, yep, more power to you.
That's right. Yeah. And she was talking about closing the gap, and I'm thinking, you know, closing the gap, you guys, does it affect the pension too? I mean, you know, us people, we only got a little bit of old people on where I come from.
Hmm.
All our old people passed on, you know, they passed on early age.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
And there's no retirement age.
Compared to our non-Indigenous counterpart, is what you're saying?
That's right, yeah. So we're in the same boat. We're struggling to keep alive, to enjoy our pension, enjoy our retirement, where all our age group are passing on, you know? And what's that? Is there anything done about that?
Should be more benefits. When you talk about our health for First Nation people, longevity of life is shorter than non-Indigenous Australians. So exactly, there should be a lower number in regard to pensions, what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
True. Yes, a good question, a good question. Good question. Otherwise, fix up our health. Invest in that if you don't want to pay a pension because we're dying a lot earlier than non-Indigenous Australians, yeah?
That's right. Yeah, and the report came out, I think, early this year or end of last year about the Closing the Gap report, and nothing's changed. 10 years ago, you know? And that thing with the reconciliation, we've got these things in our community to make us live longer and look after us. And but we want to do something ourselves too, eh? But,
sure.
They're not listening to people on the ground here.
You're not listening to grassroots. I mean, look, we've got the answers to our problems, haven't we, is what you're saying.
We're the only ones that can do it because we live it.
That's live it. Exactly. Exactly.
And top-heavy, government top-heavy. And I think most of our organisation top-heavy too, you know?
Yep, exactly.
Our medical centre should be getting more involved politically because it's part of our health. Well, our housing mob.
Yep.
And people like you fellas too, you know. I mean, you do it all the time because you know you're visible. You're out there.
Well, as a elder person, First Nation man, having this conversation on National Talk Black is another way of discussion, another way of highlighting the situation that we are in as black people in this country. Yes.
Yeah, bring it up. A lot of us don't have that courage to say anything, or don't know where the resources are. Who to talk to, who to speak to, and a lot of us because we still got that habit of you got to talk on phone, you start English, you know.
Yeah, sure. But good, brother, good you yarn in here, and it's the tool, and keep this in mind, and let the other Pumley members belong to you know that this yarn is here, and we utilise it, my brother.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, thanks for the time.
No, thank you, my brother. All the best to you. You take care.
Yeah, well.
A beautiful yarn. That's Deborah Pilot, and it makes some very important points there. He's talking about as in First Nation people struggling with health, and if we are dying at a younger age compared to non-Indigenous Australians, then maybe the so-called pension age should be dropped. Probably a good point, or increase the health of First Nation people in regard to medical service and what have you. Have your say, yarn up strong. That deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. We're coming to you live here from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bummer Brit Media 98.7 FM. Look, we're going to catch up with Brother Stephen Evans, Director of Cultural Enhancement Group. I believe I got him on the line. Steve, you there? Hello?
Hi, this is Nick.
Oh, this is Nick Treby, a National Executive Officer at Relations Australia.
Yeah, good day. How's it going?
Thank you. Good. Trevor here. I'm looking at the wrong piece of paper here. We are a professional company. I want you to know that. Too Deadly, brother. How are you?
Yeah, good? I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah, how are you? All right, Too Deadly. Thank you. Now, new research launched today by Relations Australia reveals the close relationship in our lives have been significantly affected by restrictions associated with COVID-19. And what degree do you reckon that is happening, Nick?
Look, I think there's not a huge surprise in some of the numbers. In that, you know, we know that the last few months have been a really incredible challenge for people. All of the different restrictions that have been imposed upon us, and at the same time, you know, the great uncertainty about what's going on in the wider world. And so to see that, you know, that's increased levels of stress and tension within relationships doesn't really come as a huge surprise. But nevertheless, it shows that, you know, there's certainly something there that needs to be addressed.
Well, when you talk about isolation, look, pressure in regards to, if not finance, in each other's space, the future ahead. It can all, like all four walls closing in, and it can form a lot of pressure, a lot of anxiety, and disrupt in a relationship, yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, you know, the pressure, there were just so many different elements to it over the last few months that it sort of becomes a bit of a perfect storm in that sense. And that, you know, we found in our research that people felt like they had to put a lot of extra effort into maintaining a lot of those relationships, their relationships with their children, with their parents, but obviously also with their partners. But then also, you know, their relationships with people out there in their broader social networks, the people they couldn't see. They were becoming isolated from them, and so they had to try harder. So it was a whole lot of different issues all happening at the same time.
Yeah, fantastic. So in regards to research, were you getting phone calls as such as in Relations Australia, or were you out there at grassroots level knocking on doors, having conversations with people? How'd that work, Nick?
Look, the research is based on a survey that we run off our website. So it's people who are actually on our website looking for information or for services get asked to complete the survey. So it's not sort of a general survey of the public. But what we do know is that some of our helplines and other information services and some of our direct client services have seen an increase in demand over that period as well. So it backs up the research.
Sure. So, look, a very important space that you're working in regarding Relationship Australia. It's about keeping the family together, so to speak, in regards to communication and conversations that need to be had. So it's like I said, a very important space that you're working in. But I thank you for coming to the table. What can families do in regarding bettering their relationships, or what's your contact there, please, mate?
Sure. Look, the most important thing at a time like this is that we support each other and that we do what we can to really promote healthy and safe and respectful relationships. Understanding that everyone's going through a tough time, so we maybe need to be a little bit more lenient, a little bit more willing to compromise and support each other through the difficult times that we're facing.
Yes.
People can jump onto our website at relationships.org.au where they can get access to tip sheets and information that might help them, but, you know, think about how to be more open in their communication with each other, how to be honest, and how to support one another. And then obviously for people who feel like they need further assistance, then right across the country we have services that are available for clients, whether it's one-on-one counselling or family mediation or dispute resolution, and all of those services are still up and running. Some of them obviously have moved over the phone or online due to the same restrictions.
Yes. Yes.
But you know, in every major location, people can access Relationships Australia for support.
Levy, one last question, but probably an important question. When we're talking about communication, should there be both parties at the table?
Look, ideally, yeah.
It is, you know, best.
The hallmark of a good relationship is that both parties are open and honest with each other and are willing to work together. Obviously, that can't always happen, and that's when, you know, an experienced counsellor or...
But one is better than none.
Exactly, yeah.
Could you help the individual if that's the case?
Yeah, you can. There are a whole lot of ways that we can help the individual work their way through issues, even if the other partner has not come to the table.
Lovely. Very important discussion. Nick, thank you very much. All the best to you, Nick. You take care. Keep in touch and stay safe, eh?
Yeah, thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Deadly Yarn there. Nick Tebby, his name is, National Executive Officer at Relationship Australia, and with COVID-19 restrictions and the effects on people's relationships. So if you're feeling that way inclined or you need someone to talk to, relationships are there for you. All the www.relationships.org.au, or you can give them a call, 1300 364 277. And it'll look fantastic to have two parties at the table. If not, one will do. One's better than none, but beginning is half done. Have that conversation, Bob, and had that conversation with Trendy Trev here with your daily program, National Talk Black. That daily number, 1-800-422-416. And it is National Talk Black live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bama, Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Too Deadly, have your say, Mob, yarn up strong.
Like to sing a lullaby for you. It's a beautiful song. Travelled amongst many different Aboriginal tribes.
Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Yeah, the voice there, Guy Sebastian, thank you very much. Intro, it is National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, 1-800-422-416. Called a number, Yana with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumber, Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. 1-800-422-416. Next guest come to join me here in the studio, I've got Brother Stephen Evans. I work closely with the brother, with director as directors of Cultural Enhancement Group. And we talk about the march that happened here in Cairns for Black Lives Matters. Come to join me, Steve. Good morning. How are you?
Really good, thanks, Trev. How are you?
Very good, my brother. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, we go back a long way. We served together at Cairns State High School, in A Block. Did many stuff there, and look, we're living our lives here. Local boy here in Cairns, white on the outside, black on the inside. My Miglu brother, I say. And look, we run the business cultural enhancement group regarding getting culture in the curriculum in regarding schools. But let's talk about the Black Lives Matter march here in Cairns. You attended. I was on shift, so I couldn't do that. Tell us about the march and a good turnout.
Yeah, no, fantastic turn up. And, you know, and the awareness is obviously growing out there for something that's, you know, been happening for hundreds of years. And I suppose, you know, that media depending on how they want to spin it, can increase that awareness and help people grow or, you know, promote the negativity. But the day was fantastic. I'm not sure the numbers there. Quite a few thousand people there on the march and through the streets. And I suppose one of the things that came out of it was the feeling that happened at the end. You know, everybody come back it was certainly everyone was very empowered by what had happened and the feeling that was there.
Mm-hmm.
But as with so many times in the past, you know, we're looking for that next step.
Well, we've marched all these years, and with our ancestors who have gone before us have marched. We continue to use that as a tool to get our message across. But there needs to be more than marches, is what you're alluding to, yeah?
Well, you know, what is the next step? Because, you know, we've got, you know, people continue to look to the government to make changes. But the wisdom required to take the next step and improve the lives equally for all isn't within their capacity. They aren't capable of making that change. It's
got to come from the people.
Well, the government is there for a purpose. You know, the government is there to uphold and implement our rights. You know, whether it's social or in the workplace or criminal or whatever it is, that's their one area. There is no room within the government for anything cultural, because it's not their area of ability. You know, they
can't. Well, government's inability is what you're talking about to deliver solutions of the going wrongs in this country.
Well, the only sphere, like, you know, there's three main spheres of all societies, is basically the economic, which provides our needs, the government, which is supposed to be just looking after our rights, and then the rest belongs to culture. Human culture is, you know, so vast, and it is where the wisdom of humanity sits.
And that's not a government. They shouldn't be working in their sphere, is what you're saying.
Well, no, you can't elect an elder.
Yes, that's right.
It doesn't work. The wisdom is recognised by others. You know, you can nominate and say, well, we recognise you as, and it's up to them whether they accept and where they go with it. And that's the type of way that decision making needs to be made within the cultural sphere. It's coming from those who have a demonstrated growth as an individual, as, you know,
sure,
who they are, sort of thing, and where they can lead us. And, you know, things that come under the cultural sphere are education, health and well-being, of course, land and environment management, all these sorts of things.
So you're saying government shouldn't have a finger in that?
Why should they?
They
haven't got the demonstrated ability.
Yes.
You know, that's got to come from, you know, so much of the issues at the moment that happened because of Black Lives Matter marches and demonstrations was because of a lack of morality in our society, that these things can even happen.
Mm.
And morality is something that comes through. And, you know, look at this country's cultures. So much of what comes and flows from the culture of this country is, you know, like I'm only experiencing the tip of it, I suppose, when I've learnt what I've learnt so far in my life. Mm. And yet, compared to my experience in education, learning from the cultures of this country puts that into perspective of being like in kindergarten. Mm. You know, what you learn going to school is so little compared to what's known in the way of operating together in harmony. And
fantastic.
How to do that.
Yeah. So when we're talking about government is to administrate the responsibility in the economy side of it, is what you're saying?
No, that's not theirs either. But the key word you use there is administrate.
Mm.
That's their job. And if you look at any of the aspects that they're putting their fingers into, such as, like we just said, education, health, the arts, all these things, all they're good at doing, and rightfully so, is administrating them.
Mm.
But you don't.
And that's
lead,
all they should do.
You don't lead
and then hand it over, hand the portfolio over to the people.
Basically, that's sort of the point of us saying, well, where do we go to next? And we, as the people, are the ones who have to set up this sphere ourselves.
Mm.
If you know, if we don't build it, how can we move forward?
So that means, you know, changing the so-called, well, if you look at the system and the government and how it's been running since 250-odd years.
And longer, yeah.
Whatever, you know, and it's not working.
Well,
so we need to change.
It only works, it's not working in the areas that they don't belong in.
Okay, they don't belong in.
They don't
right.
belong in anything cultural. It's not their
sure.
area.
True, yep.
Democracy, you can only vote for, you know, the laws and people in there to uphold these laws and whatever area of our lives that may be. And that's all well and good, and that's where it belongs. Mm. It is not in the areas of these other aspects of cultural cultural well-being and so forth. So, you know, it's about human culture. It's not about any one culture, about all the cultures coming and contributing and being a part of. Especially, you know, for me, one of the starting points has to be education, because traditionally so much was learnt through modelling and observing. And if you've got high quality moral teachers in front of you, well, guess how the kids are going to turn out.
Well, exactly. And when we talk about our elders back in the day, we looked to our elders and they were our teachers, and they gave us guidance and how we lived a really down-to-earth, caring, loving, sharing life.
Sure.
Thanks to our elders, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And government don't have that from the spirit, do they, from the heart?
No. Yeah, it might happen by coincidence, but you can't dictate it through elections and that sort of thing. That's not where you get these people from. You know, a lot of people listening would themselves, in their own minds, identify probably several people who they look up to and revere as being worthy of someone to follow in the human cultural sphere.
And lead with good intentions for the people and for the love of life, including Mother Nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's why, you know, things like environment and land management fits into the cultural sphere.
Yes.
Education is there because you need a moral guidance. It's not about what you know. It's about who you are. That's the first rule for a teacher.
And when we talk about, we're changing the system, so to speak, and people power is the tool that we use to change the system. Change is the engine of growth. Well, if it ain't working, you know, you need to change it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're saying if it ain't broke, then don't fix it. Well, it's broken. it's broken. Yeah.
It's there's a growth happening that it doesn't belong to the government body, and it has to be cut away from the government body, and it's the human cultural sphere that needs to be separate.
Okay, yeah. So, and to make these changes, like you said, we as First Nation people, we march against Black Lives Matter, we march for our rights, land rights and what have you. That's the only tool that we got at this point in time, you know what I mean? We're getting black people into the political arena. We're getting activists out there. But it's got to come from the people in regard to making changes.
Yeah, absolutely, Trev. And if we keep looking to the system of government to change it, we're not going to see the change. It's us that we have to create.
Well, they're too close. They can't see it themselves and won't admit to it as well.
They haven't got the ability to see it. They don't come from the cultural sphere themselves. The wisdom of all life comes from our cultural sphere.
Yeah, and when you're talking administration by the government, they've expanded that administration to all parts of life for all Australians.
Well, hey, we've let them.
We've let them, so it's our own fault as well.
Yeah, it's certainly set up so they can't allow us to change it, but that doesn't mean we can't change it.
Sure.
You know, the way the whole system is structured is that you can only vote for us if you keep it the way it is.
So it's our fault in voting the people in who are in there? It's the people's fault?
No, Trev, because it's
the system.
It's us recognising what do we need to create to move forward, and it's a human cultural sphere of activity. We've got to be the ones that have and recognise within our communities who are the leaders in these areas, whether it be education, health, aged care, environment, whatever it is. There are certainly people who are obvious leaders in these areas, and we need to support them and create this area of...
And no rules or regulations should be coming from government. How to work in that sphere is what you're saying.
They serve that sphere.
Yes.
That's always the real purpose of government, is to serve the people.
Yes.
And part of that is the economic side, so they can serve that side of it, mostly by upholding the laws and administrating. They serve by administrating. That's the purpose of a government.
Yes.
Not dealing in any of those areas of the human culture.
Not the
sphere.
Operation, so to speak, of that sphere.
You have to have the expertise, don't you? You have to have the
people.
Track record. You have to have the, you know, recognised ability that I give you the authority because I can see who you are and what you're capable of doing.
Yes, yes.
Which is a common practice in culture.
Yes. So when you have so-called member of parliament or people who have been voted, or they've been handed a portfolio as such, they're probably not specialists in that field.
Well, have they gone through a human cultural training? Have they had the education that included a morality level that allowed them to make decisions? No.
No, they
most
haven't.
Most likely not.
No, that's right. So, hey, say fake until you make it, and all big mob of fake news, you could say.
Yeah. The ones that are people who work in government, as long as they work within their sphere of administration, which is about human rights, they do a great job.
Sure.
Most cases. It's just that they shouldn't be involved in anything that has got anything to do with human culture.
Okay. The system, we know it as it is. People are voting. There's a system. And the government is administrating all areas of life, which they shouldn't, is what you're saying.
It's beyond their sphere of action, yeah. That's not where they belong.
So we as First Nation people who do our march and regarding against how we're being treated, Black Lives Do Matter, Black deaths in custody, regarding housing and regarding health, employment, all the above, this needs to go further into government to make the changes.
Well,
you're going against the grain there. It's like you against the world,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah,
feels that pressure.
What the sacrifices that have been made and the incredible accomplishments by Aboriginal people, Torres Strait Islander people, Black people across the world, you know, in so far as the marches. But it's not about just stopping there. It's about all humanity. It's all of us coming together to create this human cultural sphere that should then look after those areas that belong to it.
Mm.
And the government shouldn't have their fingers in any of them.
So this so-called system, well, it creates angst against the people, against each other. And they call it the elephant in the room, black against white. Mm. So that because of the system that creates this,
yeah,
you feel?
Sure. Well, it's a cancer. That while it sits in there, it's a cancer. Really allow the cultural sphere to operate on its own and it's a leading light for humanity.
Sure.
So right now it's just destroying the society and it doesn't belong in the government sphere.
Mm, look, a topic we need to talk more on. Have to get you back on the show and discuss that so people can add to the conversation. Come to that time, we're going to sign off, Steve, with one of the directors of the Cultural Enhancement Group. And big shout out, Bearden David. And he's one of the team as well in regarding what we do is trying to get cultural into the curriculum and educating our young ones to stay in school and get educated, but with the teachings of the elders is what we're trying to push, hey, brother?
Mm, absolutely.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you very much, Steve. We'll be in touch and you take care and we'll talk soon, eh?
Thanks, Trev.
Too deadly. Beautiful yarn there. Stephen Evans, his name is, and he's part of Cultural Enhancement Group. And I got a foot in the door there with that beautiful organisation and helping get curriculum into the culture into the curriculum in regard to education. But talking about the Black Lives Matter, the march we had here in Cairns and full on, but where do we go from here? And that's the question that was put across the table with Steve and to all our mob across this this country, First Nation people, not only about Black Lives Matter, Black deaths in custody, about First Nation people and how we continue in the 21st century with the government adhering to our voices in changing in regarding employment, housing, all the above. Have you say you mob, yarn up strong, but you may have to do it tomorrow. Murray, going to sign off here. I thank you very much for your company and that deadly number 1-800-422-416 and otherwise their Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Trinity Trev, sign off, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Too deadly, mob.